Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Yeah.
Welcome. We're embarking on a deep dive today into a period of history that, well, it's almost universally misunderstood, isn't it?
Absolutely. When you hear romanticism, I think most people jump straight to soft lighting, maybe some flowery poetry, love letters.
Exactly. But the truth is just so much more revolutionary. We're unpacking Michael Ferber's really sharp guide, Romanticism, a very short introduction. And our mission today is pretty simple. Mm-hmm. We want to show you why this movement, roughly, say, 1770 to 1850, is kind of the bedrock for so many of the cultural tensions we still grapple with.
Yeah, things like emotion versus data, or, you know, individual freedom versus the rules of society. And Ferber's argument is just so powerful because he shows Romanticism wasn't just like an art style. It was a fundamental, almost jarring shift in Western consciousness. If you find a kind of spiritual comfort in nature, or if you insist on being, you know, authentic in your job, or believe creativity is a form of rebellion, well, you're basically running on romantic software.
Right. Operating on its legacy.
Exactly. And it's crucial to get that it was complex, sometimes contradictory even. Ferber doesn't give us a checklist. He talks about it as a disruptive cluster of ideas.
A cluster that grew out of a world in, frankly, crisis.
Precisely.
So our guide through all this is Michael Ferber. He's professor emeritus of English and Humanities at the University of New Hampshire. And he's really spent decades looking into the radical core of this movement.
Yeah, and what makes his view so potent, I think, is his focus on some of the, let's say, more explosive figures. You know, people like William Blake, the visionary poet, or Percy Bysshe Shelley, the radical anarchist.
Right, the real firebrands.
Exactly. So by studying the extremists, Ferber gets right to the core tensions of the whole thing. He really sees the movement as this dynamic, engaged response to massive political and social chaos. It wasn't just academics in a library.
No, definitely not. And I think that's why this book works so well, especially for, you know, a curious listener. Ferber doesn't just keep the art locked away. He connects that yearning you see in the paintings and poems directly to the frustrations artists were feeling about, well, revolutions, industry, political failures, real world stuff.
Which brings us neatly to a central idea. Romanticism as this cluster, defined mostly by what it opposed. It wasn't so much an ism for something, but a grand rejection of things.
Okay, so what were they rejecting? Ferber outlines three big ones, right?
Yeah, three huge dominant forces. First, the Enlightenment's emphasis on pure cold reason, that idea that you could reduce human experience to, well, just data.
Sterile data, yeah. They pushed back hard against that.
Violently. And second, they recoiled from the dehumanizing impact of the Industrial Revolution, the grime, the factories, the sense that people were just becoming cogs in a giant, ugly machine.
You can feel that visceral reaction in the art.
Mm-hmm.
And the third?
The third was neoclassicism. Those really strict, rigid rules for art that said everything great had to look like, you know, ancient Greek statues. All formal order, no spontaneity.
So romanticism was like the creative scream against all that formality and cold logic.
Exactly. So the book isn't really a timeline. It's more of a thematic roadmap.
Yeah,
it walks us through the big ideas of the French Revolution, the self, nature, to explain how this whole rejection basically rewired Western identity.
Okay, let's dive into that roadmap. And we absolutely have to start where the whole era kicked off, the firestorm of the French Revolution. Ferber says this was the absolute catalyst. And initially, you had this incredible, almost, well, delusional optimism sweeping across Europe. All the promises of liberty, equality, human potential.
Right. Wordsworth famously captured it. Bliss was it in that dawn to be alive, but to be young was very heaven. It felt like a new age for humanity.
It really did. But then, and this is the crucial pivot, Ferber points out that euphoria just gets brutally crushed. First, because of the Jacobin terror, you know, the mass executions, the chaos.
Total disillusion.
Yeah. And then the final insult, Napoleon, the revolutionary general, crowns himself emperor. It was this profound, world-shaking betrayal of the ideal.
So what happens then? Since political freedom failed them out there in the world, the romantics were forced to redirect that revolutionary energy inward. Liberation wasn't going to come from politics anymore. It had to be found in the self, in nature, in the power of imagination. The external world failed, so the internal world became sacred.
And that failure, that shattered political dream, leads right into the next huge theme Ferber tackles. the sanctification of the self,
mm-hmm.
the focus shifts completely away from the Enlightenment idea of a universal, rational man.
And towards the unique, messy, subjective experience of the individual, suddenly qualities like genius, originality, and maybe most importantly, sincerity become the highest values.
So the artist isn't just a skilled craftsperson imitating the classics anymore.
No, not at all. The artist is now seen as a kind of prophet, a visionary. Their authentic feelings, their inner world, that's the source of truth. It elevates the individual artist almost to, like, a divine status.
And this gives us that iconic figure we still recognize everywhere, right? The Byronic hero.
Absolutely. That brooding, isolated, rebellious figure. Think Heathcliff, maybe? Someone who defies society because their unique inner life is seen as more honest, more real than any polite convention.
The original rock star, basically.
Yeah, pretty much. And from that intense focus on the individual, their gaze then expands outward to nature.
But they completely redefined nature too, didn't they? It wasn't the Enlightenment's orderly machine anymore.
Not at all. For the Romantics, nature was alive, a living, breathing, spiritual force, something that could actually heal the wounds inflicted by industrial life.
And this is where Ferber brings in that really important distinction between the beautiful and the sublime.
Yes. Crucial difference. The beautiful is, well, it's nice, pleasant. A pretty landscape, a garden, easy on the eyes.
But the sublime, that's different. That's nature's terrifying power. Think violent thunderstorms, huge, jagged, unconquerable mountains.
Things that make you feel small.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's terrifying, but confronting it, you know, standing on that huge cliff edge, looking into the abyss, it makes the individual feel tiny, yet weirdly connected to something vast, something transcendent. It's awe mixed with fear.
Yeah, that painter, Caspar David Friedrich, his wanderer above the sea of fog that captures it perfectly, the lone figure dwarfed by this immense, misty landscape.
And Ferber points out that this almost spiritual reverence for wild, untamed nature was a kind of psychological defense, wasn't it? Against the ugliness and scale of early industry and escape hatch.
Definitely an escape hatch. And finally, rounding out this cluster of ideas, the Romantics had this deep fascination with the other. Basically, anything that fell outside the narrow 18th century focus on Greco-Roman reason.
Right, so they weren't just looking forward, they were looking elsewhere.
Exactly. They looked backward to the medieval past. That sparked the whole Gothic rival castles, mysticism. And they dove into folklore, like the Brothers Grimm collecting folktales.
Finding identity not in abstract reason, but in deep, traditional, often national stories.
Precisely. And of course, the supernatural makes a massive comeback. This is when the Gothic novel just explodes.
And Ferber uses Frankenstein as a key example here, which is brilliant.
It's perfect, isn't it? Dr. Frankenstein, the scientist, he represents the hubris of Enlightenment reason. Unchecked scientific ambition that ignores human feeling, overreaches, and literally creates a monster.
Wow. That critique of reason without sort of humanistic grounding feels incredibly relevant today.
It really does. Okay, so let's try and distill maybe three core themes from Ferber's analysis that really echo in our modern world. First one, the elevation of imagination and emotion over pure reason.
Right. The Romantics basically taught us that imagination isn't just fantasy, it's a powerful creative faculty. It can see truths that cold logic misses. And emotion isn't a weakness, it's a vital guide.
And if you think about that today, well, it's the root of why we value intuition, isn't it? It validates trusting your gut, even when the spreadsheet says otherwise. It's the philosophical ancestor of our modern focus on emotional intelligence.
That makes total sense.
Okay.
Okay, second big takeaway. The radical transformation of the artist as prophet and social critic.
Yeah, this is huge. The artist's job went from, you know, making nice things for a rich patron to being this visionary rebel, someone with a unique duty to express their inner world with total sincerity, even if it meant challenging society.
And that explains our modern obsession with authenticity, doesn't it? We demand vulnerability from artists, from writers, from musicians. We want their truth.
We want the pain, the rebellion.
Yeah. That willingness to expose the self, warts, and all that feels like a direct line back to romantic sincerity.
Absolutely. And the third, maybe the most pervasive legacy, the enduring power of the individual. Their intense, relentless focus on the unique, subjective self literally paved the way for modern psychology, for the self-help industry, for our whole cultural obsession with personal narrative.
Oh, totally. I mean, just look around. This near-universal belief in self-discovery, the whole journey to find yourself and be true to yourself, that's not some new agey Instagram thing.
No, it's pure romanticism.
It's the direct psychological inheritance of this era. We are absolutely still on that individual journey they started.
Ferber's analysis is so rich, and some of his phrasing really sticks. Even paraphrased, the core ideas are powerful. Let's touch on maybe three statements that capture these big shifts.
Good idea. Okay, first, maybe capturing Ferber's definition of that core shift. Romanticism is a persistent and revolutionary turn inward.
That's strong. It nails that massive paradigm shift, right? From focusing on external things, governments, churches, rules, to the internal world of the self, feeling and personal experience trumping rigid doctrine.
Okay, second, the French Revolution was the forge of the Romantic spirit.
Yeah, that one sentence explains so much. It tells you the movement wasn't born from comfort. It was born from violent political hope, followed by just shattering disillusionment. That created the emotional pressure cooker for the whole artistic response.
The conditions were right or wrong, depending how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, how about that quote from Shelley that reveals just how ambitious they were? The poet is the unacknowledged legislator of the world.
Wow, yeah. They genuinely believed that art, that imagination, held more real power, social political power, than kings or parliaments. The creator as this transformative force in society.
It's an incredible claim. So bringing this back to earth a bit,
yeah.
How can we maybe use these ideas from, 200 years ago right now? Ferber's discussion of the sublime seems to offer a pretty practical tip.
It does. He suggests cultivating that spiritual well-being by actively seeking out moments of awe in nature.
And the sublime doesn't have to be climbing Mount Everest, right? It could be a dramatic sunset, a really wild storm rolling in, even just a quiet walk in a forest.
Exactly. Use that romantic reverence for nature, even small doses, as an antidote to the constant buzz of modern digital life. Seek out a bit of solitude and awe. It can help reconnect you.
And on a more personal level, maybe lean into that romantic value of sincerity. Use it as a lens to critique some of the pressures we feel today. Pressure to conform at work or to project this perfect curated self online.
Right. That push for originality, for being genuinely yourself, it's still a virtue worth fighting for, maybe now more than ever. And looking maybe more broadly at the political side, Ferber's analysis of how revolutionary passion turned into the terror. Well, that offers a timeless lesson, doesn't it, about political balance?
Yeah, it encourages a kind of critical thinking about movements today. How do we balance those really noble ideals with enough realism to avoid, destructive overreach?
It's a necessary caution.
Definitely. For me, the most surprising thing digging into this was realizing just how deeply embedded these romantic ideas are in my own thinking. It feels less like history and more like, my operating system sometimes.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was genuinely struck by how the critique of science in Frankenstein, that warning about reason detached from feeling, is such a fundamental romantic anxiety about progress.
That's a great point. And for me, I think the most valuable takeaway is seeing how the core tensions romanticism surfaced, reason versus emotion, the individual versus society, the artist versus the mainstream. These are still the central psychological and cultural battles we're fighting.
Still wrestling with them.
We are absolutely still living in the world they shaped. And understanding this history, understanding where these ideas came from, it gives us, I think, tremendous self-awareness to navigate our own times.
Couldn't agree more. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.